bad and need it.
That's a lot.
The position is called Pentagon Springs. It's about maybe about 3 miles off the main road. Pentagon Springs. Okay, first three slides are just regular anatomy. In case they throw this on the registry, I don't know if they will, but there's a difference between the colon and the large intestine. The colon does not include the cecum or the rectum. Now, if you go out there and hear doctors and techs talking about adults, use colon and large intestine interchangeably. But theoretically, the colon does not include those two areas versus the large intestine, which includes everything. Cecum and rectum are not part of the colon. And the large colon, it's on the outer side of the abdomen, it's an upside down U. And on Zen patients, the left flexor can be all the way up by the diaphragm. So you have to watch it on the floor to know where the flexors are when you do your overhead things to be able to include that. And I think the anatomy, you guys know the anatomy pretty well. It was on study guides, so mm-hmm. We don't spend a whole lot of time on this. Okay, most of the pathology that occurs in the rectal area and the signal area. So those are probably the most important areas to make sure you get your films in the rectal signal area. This is a lateral of the rectum. And when you put in the enema tip, it goes through the orifice. And you want to put it in direction toward the umbilicus, which is the one that's right in this area. After the sphincters, you can actually feel the sphincters grab the tip when you put it in. And after they grab it, then you want to change the angle and start coming more in this direction. You don't want to bring the tip into the wall. So after you feel the muscles start to grab the tip and pull it in, then you want to change the angle and bring them more superior. And once you start doing that, it's actually fairly easy. Okay, before we look at any anatomy on here, what do you think is wrong with this film? Just from quickly looking at it.
They cut out some.
Yeah, very good. It's cut off on the left side. It's cut off on the left side. So part of the flexure is cut off on this side. So on this patient, this is an average-sized patient. This is not a large patient. So what you need to do is you need to do another film crosswise on the upper part of the abdomen. So this is something you should see this on floral and know that this guy's flexures are more toward the side. So you may want to do a straight film down below and then a crosswise to the upper part. So this guy's going to take two, at least for this view. This is, again, average-sized patient. When you get a thin patient, this flexure is going to be up real high. The thinner the patient is, the higher the flexure is on the left. And then on the right side, we have the liver pushing down, so usually this flexure will be lowered. They're pretty close on this one. Left is a little bit higher. But the liver does push down on the right side, so usually that is slightly lower. The appendix is showing up on this patient. Sometimes the appendix fills, sometimes it doesn't. It doesn't mean anything. You know, if it fills up, that's fine. If it doesn't, that's fine, too. A lot of times, if the patient comes back 24 hours later and you do a film, you'll see the appendix filled that you didn't see filled when you did this study. And again, doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It's a little warm white box.
Oh, it's that small?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that's normal.
I was like, why are you looking at it?
In fact, the trouble is, if it's inflamed, a lot of times very local window because it's inflamed and the lumen is real small.
Oh, okay.
So it's really hard to pick up appendicitis on a PE. Ultrasound is, ultrasound does work, but it's hard to see that. CT works fairly well for appendicitis. So, well, you can at ultrasound. Ultrasound is a real tough exam to pick up. Now, if it's really inflamed, you might see an indentation of sebum, which you might have to give away that there's something going on. Yeah, they don't take it as much as they used to.
Well,
I've
had my taken out. They didn't do a CT or so.
Yeah,
kind of poke around
there. Yeah, well, yeah, that's, a lot of times that's how they do it, and then it's going to be surgery. Yeah, that's probably how it's supposed to happen.
No, I don't depend. Lay them straight, smack them on my feet, then stop wanting to either kick them with my feet or smack them with my fist or something.
Okay, this was our study guide. Main thing to know is the three bands of muscle, the tenon coli, and the three bands kind of pull the colon together into these little pouches called a hostra. So it's the three bands of muscle that are forming the hostra. Internal diameter, it's a lot larger than the small bowel. And again, it's an upside down U on the outer side of the abdomen versus the small bowel. Okay, when the patient's supine, the transverse colon is going to be filled with the air because it's higher up, so the air is rising toward the transverse colon and also the sigmoid area. So if the patient's on their back, we have the transverse and the sigmoid that is filled with air. And if they turn on their stomach, just the opposite. So if you were looking at a film, you'd be able to tell if it was AP or PA based on where the air is. So you're kind of just like the stomach. From the transverse, we then have bearing in it. Okay, this is an air contrast study. Most of the BEs done today are going to be air contrast. Really nice coating. If you look at the walls, the coastal walls, got a little thin layer of bearing around there, the rest is filled with air. Real nice coating. So if there's a polyp or if there's a diverticulum coming out, it'll show up really nice. Yeah, really nice. We're cutting off a flexure. Now, this is a little bit thinner patient, so we're cutting off the flexure on this patient, so we need another film to show the top of the flexure. Right flexure, it looks pretty good. You can see it down there. Cecal area, down there, we see really well. Okay, this is a spot film. Remember we did a spot film on the small bowel? Okay, now the bearing is going the opposite way. Now we're filling up the large bowel, and it's going into the small bowel, so we're going against the normal flow. So here's the ileocecal valve, which is regulating everything coming in. So we're going against the ileocecal valve. We're pushing bearing through it. So that's where the patient starts to cramp up a little bit. Because normally this valve is saying, hey, don't let anything come through. And the radiologist is saying, I've got to get the bearing through. I'm just pushing it through. I'm adding more bearing. So this is what the patient's saying, well, I can't hold it anymore. This is too much. And the exam is not complete until you reach the small bowel and you start filling it. Because you don't know if you're actually seeing this area until you see the small bowel. So this is where the patient's going to start complaining probably the most. Right, this area.
For the AP,
assuming it's
8x10s.
Yeah, for the spot things in Florida. Unless you do it. Possibly, but then you get more scattered, and then you lose a lot of definition because of that. So yeah, all these in Florida.
So are these the overheads that you do?
This is the overhead. This was taken under Florida. This is spot film under Florida. This is a regular overhead that you would do. And this one, you see the bearing right here in the cecum, you see the ileocecal valve, and a real nice ileum on this whole valve. Most patients aren't going to show up this nice and clear. This little speck bearing down here is part of the sigmoid. It's part of the rectal sigmoid area. The rectum is down here, it's coming up, got a little loop, goes back down, comes back up, and then goes over on the left side. So don't think this is part of the cecum, and we're just seeing a separation here of the cecum. That's actually part of the sigmoid area. Mm-hmm. Okay, lateral rectum. This is going to be done on 10 by 12s. And what we're seeing on this image right here, see this real dark area? This is the balloon inside the tip that's into the patient. It's blown up so the tip doesn't come out. And you can blow these things up a lot. And that's why you want to be careful. You don't rupture the rectum. And the best way to do that is inflate that under fluoride with radiologists. Now, some techs, with the radiologist okay, when they put the enema tip in the patient, when they start the exam, they'll get a little puff of air in that bulb just to retain it in there so it doesn't slip out. Then when the radiologist comes in, then they'll fill this up to about where it is right now. But don't do that unless the radiologist says it's okay. Some radiologists have been sued because of that ruptured rectum, so they don't want you to put any air at all before you start the exam. So you have to kind of find out what the practice is for. But I would not put this much air in without the radiologist. So we have the tip in there, and then we're putting barium in and receiving rectal area right here. Sigmoid is here. We'll see that more in the butterfly and the alpaca. Okay, LAO is similar to what else? What other would be?
RPO.
The RPO. Okay, and we're looking at the upper flexure, which is going to be the left side. So the LAO, which is the downside flexure, the left side, or if we do the opposite of like the RPO, it's going to be the upside flexure, which is left to the left. Okay. We're going to do the posterior oblique from the left. So it's going to look similar to this, but it's going to be an RPO. Okay, so the RPO is going to be showing the one flexure, and we got it on there, we got the very tip of it on there. But see, now we're cutting off the rectum out here. So on most patients, the radiologist is going to have to tell you if more interested in the flexure or more interested in the rectal area. Otherwise, I would probably go for the rectum, or I'm sorry, I'd rather go for the flexure on this and catch this on the other reporter.
Okay.
Most people are going to be really long. It's going to be hard to get both on one foot.
So,
this is a 14 by 17 complex system. And you can see this flexure is up there pretty high.
So, on the RPO, you see the left side?
Left side. All these
upside
down.
RPA?
Yeah, on the RPO, you see the left side, which is the upside. Now, what you know is the downside.
Okay. That's
the left side. The left side. You know that your patient has. Oh, yeah. Now, what's happening is that as you rotate the patient, it opens up so there's no superposition. Right here. So you got a carpet pull in here, you see nice flexion that comes out here. It's not overlapping.
We'll get a piece of square pose over there.
The flexion on top of itself. And we'll probably see some other views here or something like that. Okay, if we did a CT on the patient, and when we do a CT, we also give the patient some dilute barium. So here's the stomach, full of barium. This is the duodenum as part of the C-loop, right up here. And the head of the pancreas, that sits right in the seed loop. You see extremely well on CT. And this is the small bowel that's filling up. This is jejunum right here. And here is part of the large bowel, full of air. And then the little air pocket, because the air is rising up, so there's a little bit of air right in that area. And also here is probably part of transverse colon, or one of the flexures right up here, where we got an air pocket up in there also. When you do a CT, you also get a patient IV contrast. So the IV contrast is now demonstrating the internal part of the kidney, and we're going to get into that in probably 2 weeks. And here's the right kidney, left kidney. This is vena cava, aorta. See the intestines, the stomach, the liver, the gallbladder. CT is really tremendous. See the muscles in the back, see the bone, the spine, neural foramen, the spinal cord. CT is really amazing. Okay, small intestine, mainly it is there for absorption. Okay, see, this is where I have a question about the one that was on the test. Vitamins are absorbed in the small bowel, vitamins and minerals, but specifically vitamins B and K are in the large intestine. I didn't think that question was worded very well. So in the large intestine that we're studying right now, vitamins B and vitamins K are absorbed, amino acids are absorbed, and this process then sometimes creates gas, which everybody knows about, right? Gas and blood. And the main job of the large intestine is elimination of body waste. Have a soup. Head down the way.
Or
we're probably doing more barium. That barium comes up. Okay, the prep for the patient. Evening meal should be light. What do you think that is?
Not a lot of cold ones, right?
Because it's 24 hours, whatever you eat is going to be down in the colon. So you don't want hamburgers and all the stuff down there and when you're going to be doing the enema. So something like salads, you know, something like that works pretty well.
Brussels sprouts.
Okay, but whatever, it should be light. You don't want anything real heavy. Okay, a cathartic is a bowel cleansing agent, so the patient has to take that. And it should be NPO after midnight. Because if they eat, you know, right around midnight, that's going to go down into the large intestine by the time they come in for the exam, so they'll make sure there's nothing there. So NPO after midnight. Same with the GI, no gum chewing, no smoking. And an enema on the morning of the exam, a lot of places use something called a vacuum kit. EVAQ or EVAC-Q-kit. Anyway, you can buy it at CVS, Walgreens, all these places. And it contains a little enema kit and also suppositories to clean out the rectal area and the sigmoid area.
So what's the difference between a cathartic and an enema.
Well, this will cleanse most of the bowel, but this will actually clean the rectal area and sigmoid. So anything, you know, that's left from this toward the lower end will then be cleaned out.
Okay.
Now, some patients would come into radiology, and remember, before you do these procedures, you have to do a scalp film, which is a KUB. And on a scalp film, you're looking for the patient prep, to make sure the patient took their prep and they took it correctly and it worked. You're looking for a patient positioning on the scalp film, so when you go and do your overhead, you know their anatomy just from looking at the scalp film. You're looking at your technique. So if you get a real thin patient or heavy patient, the scalp film will tell you, I need to increase my technique for the overheads and decrease the technique or whatever. And you're also looking for a pathology that will show up before you get contrast. So let's suppose a patient comes in for a VE, but they have an aortic aneurysm. You do your scalp film, and you see a mass area. Now, once you give the patient barium, you're not going to see that mass area because barium is going to cover it up. So that's the reason for doing the scalp film. So we've got about four reasons to do the scalp film. Okay, you're looking for pathology. You want to check your technique. You want to check your positioning. And you want to check the patient prep. Now, there's been a few times where the patient would come in, we do a scalp film for a very minimal, and the patient wasn't cleaned out well enough. Now, a few times, the radiologist would say, well, let's do a cleansing enema on the x-ray table. So usually what you do is a warm soap suds enema. You put a little bit, tiny bit of soap in the water, and you essentially give the patient an enema, and say, well, they're bubbling out. You do another scalp film, and then the radiologist says, okay, now we'll do it. That's probably not going to be done very much, but just know if a radiologist requests that, it is possible. If you're in a hospital, usually the patient back up to the unit and have to do that.
Yay.
There's been a few times when either out of time or whatever,
technique, pathology. It's four. Technique, pathology. Why did you just got down? It's four reasons. Technique, pathology. What were the other two?
Well, you can write it down. That's what I said.
Okay.
Yeah, you can take a
Terry, real quick, the four reasons you take the scalp film, technique, pathology,
positioning,
and
make sure the patient's
okay. Okay, let's take a break and let's come back at that. Saline, mag citrate, or mag sulfate. Green. We should know if it's an irritant or a thing. Irritant is cast wild, which means it's nasty, more harsh. And one should you not give cathartic to a patient? If they have little tiny bleeding, that's okay. If you have gross bleeding, they should not be given cathartic. This might make it worse. Severe diarrhea, if there's an obstruction of some kind, or a lesion of some kind. Usually, this is going to be handled usually by the receptionist. When somebody calls in and they order a very minimal, you find out what the symptoms are, if they have any of these, and then they probably know what kind of preparations other than cathartic.
How do you know if they have?
I mean, the first two, obviously, they know, but how do you know about the other two?
Should have the patient's history.
How do they know if there's a lesion before you do a test?
Well, it's a possible cancer. So if there's, I mean, possible, yeah, you don't know 100%. But if I'm sending a patient in for a BE because there's a mass. Okay, no, you don't want to give them a heart. I mean, this is not 100%. These are indication of what you should not do.
Carry over the two different types of saline containers.
Max citrate and max sulfate. So magnesium citrate and magnesium sulfate.
Very, very
sulfate. Max sulfate. Max sulfate.
There you go. Now, what if you use some of the other things in that same kind of
Okay, this is the EVAC full bearing. One thing you want to make sure you do beforehand is get all the air out of the tube. And you want to fill it with barium. Because you want to control how much air is going to the patient. So if this is filled with air, you're going to give the patient air they don't want to get. So make sure that is filled with barium.
Run it.
But actually, you can hold the tip up, and when it's even with the bag, Jared will come up and stop right at our arm. And don't lower the tip down. Okay, it's a single-use full system nowadays. You use these bags, and these bags, after you use them, there's going to be some bearing left in there. The patient doesn't always take all the bearing. This bag is not considered contaminated because it came in contact with the patient's inner solutions, body fluid. So now this has to be disposed of into a red disposable bag because it's supposedly possibly infected. So you're going to end up with these big heavy bags that you have to possibly put on your mouth. You don't want to throw that in the garbage directly. Now, when I first started, it wasn't that long ago, really. We had a it was a plastic bucket, and we were doing like 30 or 40 BEs every day. So we would have a bucket, and we continually fill up the bucket with barium. We'd mix up barium for in the bucket. So the patient always had the same system connected to it. So if you had one patient, and let's say they pushed the barium back into the tube, well, then the next patient got it. Well, yeah, but at the time, that's all there was. There wasn't disposable items on the bag. Not only that, well, there was only one tip. It wasn't a disposable tip. So in between patients, you would have to disinfect the tip and then use it on the next patient. It was disgusting. You know, we didn't have disposable stuff at the time. Some types of radiologists prefer the cold. Just so you know, it could be either one. We have to make sure the bearing is well mixed. So if you have the bearing sitting in these bags all morning, and now 11 o'clock in the morning, remix it and shake it up before the fishing.
Now the benefit of the room temperature is easier on the patient, but the cold, it does less spasms. It's
supposed to reduce the spasms.
Okay.
That's the theory behind it. Okay, if the radiologist says, you know, the patient's having spasms, let's try some glucagon. Know where the glucagon is. That's injectable, so the radiologist has to inject it. You know where it is, know where the needles and syringes are. And topical anesthetic like lidocaine, Contacane, something like that, could be added to the bearing and mixed in there to reduce pain. That's not used very often. But again, know where that is, you know, in case they ask for it.
Lidocaine
really
reduce pain? Yeah, it does.
Placebo. I've seen some radiologists do placebo, and I tell the patient, we're going to put this in there, and it was like saline. And the patient, psychology. Yeah. A lot of the psychology. Okay, the tubes that come with the kits, the bags, is this tube here. And nobody ever uses those because there's no pop on it. So you always buy these extra kits that has the cup. Here's the cup when it's blown up. And that's, you know, sits inside the peripheral area. This is the tube that you would insert to your I threw a party once. We got a DVD back and we told them to walk with wine. Now get the animal tips to fill up your glasses. Okay, this is a regular Okay, this one is this is an air contrast. You think the bearing is thicker for air contrast, correct? Just like it was for the upper jaw. So this tube movement is larger. And now we have one to inflate the cuff. And now we're going to insert air in addition to the bearing. So we have two tubes in addition to the bearing tubes. And you're going to have two regulators to put my air in and clamps on all these guys. Clamp on that tube, clamp on that tube, clamp on that tube, clamp on that tube. So you're controlling all these things in addition to watching the patient and what the radiologist and changing the bones. So you're pretty busy doing these as well. Okay, this is what position is this?
This is Sims.
You know, make sure the patient's covered up when you do this. You can have a towel or another gown or something on the patient. You don't have to be totally exposed. Well, let me tell you a story about a cardiologist. The hospital I was working at, one of the extra rooms they had floral, had a room going into the main extra department, and then the other door going into the main hall. Which was always locked. So the cardiologist was in consulting with the radiologist, and he decided he was going to leave. So instead of going through the main entrance for radiology, he was going to come through an X-ray room. So he comes into the room, and the patient was essentially like this, with her rear end smoking color. And he opens up the door to the hallway, and he goes out and leaves the door in the hallway open. And all the students are looking in at that. But anyway, the tech said, excuse me, I got a patient here. And he went to administration to report it to tech for insubordination.
Oh, come on.
That's not a lie. It's unbelievable. So I was wondering if I might get a call from administration.
Is the kids
from the meeting's at tech. The kid made up the name. I said, that was Jose. He was happy. Because she questioned this guy walking through and saying to her. You had no concern with the patient?
No, we don't.
This was the same doctor. They had parking space out in the parking lot. So somebody was in his space. So he parked behind him so the guy couldn't get out and called the tow truck. And he stood there until he told the truth.
Yep.
Other ways to do it is kind of bury the air in together at the same time. radiologists have patients rolling back and forth, sometimes on their abdomen, on their back, in different oblique positions. A little bit of bearing, a little bit of bear. Some radiologists will have you bring the bearing back on the floor, drop it down so the bearing goes back into the bag, then put air in. So they all do it a little bit differently. You kind of have to know after a while what radiologists are working with in the procedure, and then you kind of anticipate what they're going to do. Okay, the tachycardiograms, this is where you're looking at the rectal area, and the whole purpose of that is to fill just the rectal area with a real thick bearing. And then as they're evacuating, you do your images as they're evacuating, so you can see the actual function of that rectal sigmoid area. Things to look for when you do the tachycardiogram: rectocele and suction, prolapse. And you need special devices to do this. You need something for the patient to sit on. And here it is on the table. So they're sitting on this, they're evacuating, and you're taking an image.
Oh, my.
And because you're using thick barium, it comes in a tube, or you can put real thick barium in a syringe and then push it in through. Okay, and this is just showing some of the fills that you would do during your tachycardiogram. You have to take the patient bear down and strain a little bit, and you look at the valve sound. Yeah, kind of like that. Okay, review the chart. We went over that already. This one's important. Never force the tip. If you're putting the tip in, and for some reason you can't get it in, wait for the radiologist and just explain to them that you tried and you can't get it in. Wait for them to come in. Or if you have a nursing department, talk to them.
Sure.
You don't want the bag hanging too high because the gravity is going to make the barrel go into the chest. Water temperature. After the exam, the patients are weak when they get off the table. So make sure they don't fall up and off the table. It's easy for them to slip on the stool or on the floor. Yeah, they're in a hurry. Now, sometimes when you get the patient off the table, you're still going to have to tip in the patient. Because if you take the tip off, they're going to evacuate on the table. So a lot of times you'll leave it in until they kind of get in the bathroom and then take it out in there. You kind of have to vary depending on the patient. But, you got the bag you're carrying, the tubes connected, picking up the patient, maybe they're unsteady.
How much does body have to play a part in this particular aspect of the study?
Well, it does for your filming, because you're going to have to double the set on a lot of issues.
Okay, but other than that, as far as speed of evacuation, or how high it goes, or how long it takes. Yes. But other than that.
In order to get the
pretty much the same.
What do you think to do with the patient?
Thank you.
And you don't do it on the table.
Well, you can do it on the table. A lot of patients will let go and let all beer go on the table to take the tip out. So a lot of times you keep it in, so you have to watch it as you're getting off the table. It doesn't grab itself and begin to get out. And you have that little sometimes is blowing up fairly large, and they can pop that out. So you want to leave it in until they get in the bathroom, let the air out, let it come down, and then
they
take it out. They're just worried about sitting down on the toilet. They're not worried about tip or anything else. You'll get the tip going down into the toilet and getting on the floor and squirting around, and then you want to make sure you have the tip.
Do you
use the
scientific
arrow? No. Once you take the arrow, I'm not going to take the arrow.
One of the carriages, like once you take the air tube off, the bulb deflates on its own. Okay. And then how likely is it that you may be a little loosey or a little hazardous? So you want to stay with them?
Well, what's a stick out?
It's all right.
Yeah, but it's just getting off the
air. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, also, when you take the tip out, have a paper towel there and put the tips in the paper towel. It's going to leak. And even though you still have a clamp, it's going to drip and stuff, and this is stuff that's pretty contaminated. So have a paper towel, put the tip on the paper towel, wrap it up, and you have gloves on, right? So you're right. And then you take the whole bag and the tip and put it in.
Now it's contaminated. Several years ago it wasn't contaminated.
Well, it was, but we knew it was contaminated. That's what we only have one to use. Okay, if the patient has a colostomy, okay, let's keep moving. If they have a colostomy, which is an opening of the intestine coming to the outside of the body, okay, it comes through an opening called the stoma. Okay, sometimes they'll ask to do an enema through the colostomy. Now, some patients, they'll want an enema through the rectum and through the colostomy. They'll want both. Some will say just through the colostomy, so you have to know the orders of the physician what they're looking for. So you may have to do it both on one patient. But if you do just a colostomy, you want to use a special colostomy kit. Now, the stoma is very sensitive. And if you use the regular kit that we saw before, then you can blow up. And if you put that in there and blew it up, you'll just tear apart the stoma. Because it's just soft tissue, and it'll just open up the intestine area. So you want to be very careful. Unfortunately, they'll show the one out here that's a little better, but it's a tapered tip. And it kind of looks like a cone. And you just put the cone into the stoma, and depending on the size of the stoma, you just push it down until it covers up the stoma. And that works fairly well. The one that they're showing here has a little tiny ball down there, not the bigger one that we saw before. So you would put that through the stoma, inflate that a little bit, and then pull back on it so that ball is then pressed up against the inner part of the intestinal wall.
Why would they want rectal...
Well, it depends how they reconnect the ball inside.
But my understanding of a colostomy is that you totally bypass the rectum.
Not
like
so
that.
Exactly.
Really?
Sometimes most things will work.
Really? That would be a pain.
A lot of times they do it, but not all. Sometimes the rectal area is still functioning.
Ew, why?
Yeah, that seems wrong.
And then because eventually they're going to reconnect it. So they want the rectal area still to be functioning.
Oh,
that's true. Because if it sits without any drug, there's no movement there for a long time, it'll start to degenerate.
Oh.
That's true.
Well, my experience with it is they weren't going
to
be
functioning. Yeah, there's all different kinds of ways of doing it. Also, when a patient comes in to have this done, you need to have these extra bags. So if an outpatient is coming in, they need to bring the extra bags with them. If you get a patient down from the floor in the hospital, the nurses need to send these extra bags because it's going to fill off with bearing when you're done. And you need to take it off. It's going to be very heavy. And now if you want an extra bag, you've got to bear it with the stoma. So you need at least two bags. One that's not a good one, and one new one. Okay, if you see something like this on the floor of the screen, this is bad. But you want to make sure it's not for itself. If it doesn't change, that's bad. If it changes, it fills off, then it's either a spasm or a peristalsis.
That's it?
Yeah, a spasm is what it looks like. Maybe not peristalsis that much, but definitely spasm. Like that. So if you see that on the screen, you don't say to the radiologist, what is that? What's going on here?
Oh my God.
So this is called an apple core or an apicary, because all we're seeing is a core through here, and there's a mass. A cancerous mass sitting right here. And it's taking the lumen and just squeezing it down, so we're just seeing a little trickle of something going through there. Not a good sign.
So how would you see that mass?
Well, you wouldn't on a regular x-ray. You would on CT, you would on MR.
CT.
Or you possibly would on ultrasound, possibly not on x-ray. But you're seeing this effect that it has on the x-ray. So some of the reasons for doing a DE, ulcerative colitis. The bowel is going to look very irregular. It's not going to be smooth on ulcerative colitis. Diverticulosis, diverticulitis. You see the little outpouchings. Diverticulitis is when they become inflamed. This is what we're looking at on the image. it's an apple core or an apple napkin revolution. Volvulus, which is the twisting, and usually you'll see a tapered end in a section or appendicitis. Possibly could be seen in very appendicitis.
So if you saw that, would the radiologist wait a little bit to see whether or not that was just a...
And if it doesn't change, you know, after a fairly short time. And if you sit on every projection, if you rotate the patient around, and it's always there and it changes. Okay, this is ulcerative colitis. They call this the stovepipe effect. Real mildly looked up parents through here. Just jagged looking. It doesn't look too good. This portion here is not too bad. That looks fairly normal, but up here, your flexures doesn't look good at all. Okay, diverticulum is outside the water. Polyp is inside. These are diverticula. Diverticula are very common, especially in older patients. A lot of patients have them, but they don't cause any problems. If they become inflamed, then they can be a problem. They can burst and then cause peritonitis. If you have a lot of them and they don't do anything, you know, they just have them. It's not a huge problem always. A lot of times, you'll see patients that come back like maybe a day or 2 days after they had some type of upper GI or PE test, and you'll see little flecks of barium still in the diverticulum. So there's a little pocket that's collected barium that's been staying there for a while because it's not part of the normal peristalsis in that area. And that's the problem with diverticulitis. If you have a diverticula, you need a fecal material in the diverticula, and it stays there, it becomes infected, and your diverticulitis and then it explodes and you get it into peritoneum. Okay, apple core lesion again. That's the one we saw before. Here's another type of apple core lesion. Little tiny lumen. So again, we have a mass that's growing around it. Okay, volvulus. See a sharp cutoff. A lot of gas building up because the contacts are not going through the volvulus. It's being blocked because the volvulus is twisted. And that's happening also. Okay. A lot of films that we have to do for BP. And you don't necessarily have to write these down because we'll go over all this when I give you the projections and go over for the pocket guys. But APRPA, because the air bearing level is going to be different on the APPA. We can do both obliques, anterior or posterior. We're going to do posterior obliques in the lab. Some places we'll do anterior, some will do posterior. A lateral rectum, 10 by 12. And because we're giving the patient air contrast, we want right and left lateral diffuse. We want the air to rise up. See the difference between bearing and the air on the left side. And then after the patient goes to the catheter, we bring them back, and we do one more film called posterior back. And hopefully most of the bearing has been expelled. And we'll take one more film to see how much bearing has been expelled and also look for pathology on the posterior. And this is done PA, patients lying on the way. Okay, special views that can be done, there's several, but there's only two that are listed here. These are the butterflies. So we can do an AP or a PA, axial, which is the butterfly, or we can do the AP or PA oblique. Butterfly. So there's four different butterflies that we can do. AP or PA, and either an anterior or posterior oblique. All four of them are considered butterfly projections. Okay, AP or PA, pretty simple. You just want to make sure you include all of the anatomy. Because even on a fairly thin patient like this, the flexure can be very high. So you're probably going to want to watch the fluoro screen and then take a crosswise if you need to on those patients if you don't see the upper flexure. Now, somebody thin like this, you can do an 11 by 14 crosswise with upper flexures. Bigger patients, then you want to do a 14 by 17 crosswise. But this is centering at the crest for most patients.
But the actual set is crosswise.
The first one would be lengthwise, and then if you want to see the flexure, I'd do a crosswise just for the upper portion. Okay, and this is signal contrast, but this is a pretty good film. Both flexures are on. We see the extracorporeal area on there, and good feeling. And you see, there's a lot of variable there. That's a lot of pressure for patient lives. Okay, RAO or LPO. Which blood sugar are we going to see on this one? The RAO. The right side. Okay, we're going to see the right side, the downside. Okay, here's the flux you've ever seen. The right side, you've got the liver up here, pushing down the bowels, where we're seeing a nice flexure. Now, see, this flexure is kind of overlapping itself a little bit. That's not the flexure that we're looking for. We're looking for this one here. So this would be an RAO or an LPO, correct? Okay, on those views, you're looking for the right flexure, and you're also looking for the sigmoid that opens up. So there's two main areas that you want to see on the LPO. You want to see the sigmoid colon, and you want to see the right flexure. So a lot of times, and you also you want to include this flexure too, even though this is the one that's addressed. And you can see that this flexure's on, but we don't have the sigmoid area, right? So what do? They do a second film for the sigmoid. And that's going to be fairly common. And the only way you're going to know that is to watch the fluoro and see where the flexure is, and to know, okay, in this patient, it's going to take two films to get the flexures and to get the sigmoid. So you remember, the LPO, you're looking for two main areas. It's important to remember. Okay, this is the opposite of flex, so this is looking for the left flexure, which is going to be the higher one. Okay, and now we've got the left flexure on this one. And you can see we're kind of cutting off the rectum on this one. So this is hopefully the radiologist will say, make sure you get the flexures on, and we'll pick up the rectal shot on all the other positions that you use. It's good to have a radiologist that communicates. He lets you know what he's looking for, if there's pathology that you should focus in on. A lot of radiologists don't do that. But one of the best things that happened when I was a student is for about, I think it was 3 weeks, we would sit with the radiologists when we were dictating the films. And you can pick up so much of the dictating and ask questions. Well, you know, why are you calling it that? You know, we tech may do something better to see that. Those 3 weeks are probably the best I can do. Going in and doing all this is really nice. To know why you're doing it, from a radiologist perspective, made a good difference. Okay, these are the bloods we're going to do in the lab. They're going to be the posterior bloods, and we're going to look at the upside. And remember, you know, we're looking at the upside and also the sigmoid. Actually, I think these are mislabeled. So, no, that's my LPO. Okay, LPO on the right side. Okay, that's right. We're looking at the right side. And this one, RPO, we're looking at the left side. Those are good times. All the anatomy is on there. You know, single contrast, so we're just using barium. We don't have the air contrast.
How would that look? Would it not have that final?
Yeah, it would probably just be a straight piece. It would probably just suit you directly.
On the
LPO,
did you try to
get the
sigmoid
on?
You have to get
the sigmoid on. No. How do you get that? Sigmoid on. Just by centering more. Yeah, so let's say normally you would center at the crest.
Right.
But you'll reach the first one, you'll center like an inch or two above the crest. And then the second one, you'll center an inch or two below the crest. Okay, and when we do air contrast, we also have to do the cubes. These are the most important because we're going to get that distribution of the bearing in the air. So you can do this like they're shown here on the table. You're going to have a grid on the side here and then shoot across horizontally. Or like I mentioned before, put the patient onto a stretcher or a cart, moving to the upper chest portion. This is the ventral cube. This is going to be for the rectal area. Again, this is the air contrast. So now we have the air rising in the rectum. The bearing is going to be low. We're going to shoot across the table, again, with the grid. We'll go over that a little later. Okay, and this is the rectum. If we're doing regular barium, no air, the patient's going to be on the table in the true lateral position, tube comes down vertical. Okay, and you want to make sure you get the rectal area on there. Here's the tip in the patient. Nice rectal area, the sigmoid starting right here. That's a pretty good one right there. And then if we do an air contrast study, we're shooting across the table with the horizontal beam. Now we get the air level that's rising, the barium down here. And that shows up fairly well. Okay, or the decubes. Remember on lateral decubes, what side do you mark?
Upside.
The upside. So here's the marker on there for the upside. And then it's a good idea also to put a DQ marker on there or write it on the film afterwards. Some places have a lead DQ marker, so that's really nice. So this way we're going to do it in the lab. We got the grid and the cassette behind the patient, and we're shooting. And then you just have the patient on the opposite side, and then shoot the same thing. You don't necessarily have to have the grid behind the patient. You can have it in front of the patient. Otherwise, you have to have the patient turn around on the table with your head the other way. You have to do that. Okay, and this is the DQ. Very nice. Now we're getting the air that's rising up here. We're getting a double contrast up there. The most important part is going to be up in here. If you haven't accidentally cut this off, it'll probably be okay because you'll pick up on the other DQ, but you don't want to cut the upper portion off. That's where the air is rising to. Okay, this would be the opposite DQ. Now this one is at the chessboard. So, you know, if you do this one, you can use the phototiming device back there. It could be done either way. And that's the opposite DQ. Again, we're looking at the upper portion right up in here. You do have to be careful because you're going to get part of the cart or the mattress or pads or something in here sometimes interfering with that. So just be aware of that. But again, the most important section is going to be the upper part. Okay, and then they go to the restroom, you bring them back out, and this is a post-evac film. You should have a lead marker on there that says post or post-evac. And most of the barium has been eliminated. You just get a little residual residue all the way around there. You can see it's a lot more deflated than when it's filled with barium. Mm-hmm. Now, if they didn't expel all the barium, usually you have to have them go back in the restroom, have them go again, bring them back and do another course of.
How do you know how to expel
them? Just from as an audit. I mean, look at the film. You know, sometimes the patient will tell you, yeah, when you look at the film so poor, it can go wrong. So you have to have them go back in there. You know, sometimes they'll be sitting there a long time. And the problem we used to have in the hospital, because it was so busy, the patient would be sitting in the bathroom, either for the first or second post-film. In the meantime, the room is sitting there, not being used for maybe, you know, 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. You could have done another patient that time. So sometimes, they would tell you, get another patient in and have him come out the main hallway and go to another bathroom. Well, now you got a nice little bear, and he's going out that hallway. The other patient's in the bathroom, wants to come back into the room.